You're listening to the Youth Crick Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at WUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at WUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
You're the world-famous detective, Hercule Poirot. Avenger of the innocent. Is that what they call you in the papers?
And you are innocent?
You're fun.
A passenger has died. He was murdered. The murderer is on the train with us now. And every one of you is a suspect.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I'm your host, Kale Smith. Joining me today from Real Film Chatter is Patrick Campbell.
Hello, everyone. Today, I'm not driving in my car. It's a minor miracle, actually. And instead, I am sitting on my couch playing Star Wars Battlefront while we talk movies, and it's a good day.
Awesome. All right. And today, we are going to be not talking about Star Wars Battlefront, but we are going to be talking...
But we should be.
If only I played video games. but today we're going to be talking about Daddy's Home 2, and then we're going to be talking about Kenneth Branagh's new Murder on the Orient Express. And are we calling Murder on the Orient Express an adaptation or a remake?
An adaptation. It's okay. An adaptation.
All right. But starting first, well, let's get into Daddy's Home 2. So Patrick, I saw the movie nearly 3 weeks ago, because I weirdly got to see this movie early, like, and it wasn't a test screening or anything like that. It was just, they just had promo screenings for like 2 or 3 weeks in a row in Atlanta, but somehow they couldn't organize a screening for critics in anywhere in the
country. I think that they were not doing that on purpose, though, is the reasoning. I think that this was not screened for critics for a reason.
And I mean, judging the Rotten Tomatoes score, which we'll get into a little bit more about Rotten Tomatoes next week, because it's kind of what's happening over there is kind of interesting. But let's stick back to this week. As we see, it didn't do very well with critics. I mean, I think it's currently at like a 15 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, it's really, really low.
Which the first one was like, I mean, it did. Half and half, I think. It was like in the 40s or 50s. But anyway, it's at 16% right now on Rotten Tomatoes, and that's not good at all. I mean, that's not good. I mean, for a comedy, that's not good for anyone. And that's almost... That's just slightly a hair above Adam Sandler comedies at this point.
Right. And pretty much.
And actually, that's how I feel about the movie. It's just a hair above the Adam Sandler comedies.
It was a semi-decent, like, just kind of go, not worry about anything. 90% of the movie is Mel Gibson staring at Will Ferrell, looking at him like he's an idiot.
Which he is.
The other 10% is making Mel Gibson out to look like an asshole. And... I mean, the movie's harmless enough, I guess. I had fun watching it at times because I like seeing Mel Gibson and I like seeing John Lithgow. But it just kind of felt tired, and like we'd seen all this before. And for being a movie set at Christmas, like they use a lot of other music that wasn't Christmas music, which I thought was a very odd choice. And I know that sounds like a really random thing to complain about, but if you're setting a movie at Christmas, at least fill it with Christmas music. Like make it feel like a Christmas movie. And it felt really like they were just setting it at Christmas almost just because they could.
Well, the first one was set at Christmas, right?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, the first one was not. So they did it this time, which is great. But it's just like, I don't know. I mean, there was parts I liked watching about it. There was other parts that I didn't love. And overall, it just kind of was. And I mean, I guess that's fine. But it wasn't, it's nothing that I'm like going to run out and see again. There's a good chance I probably won't even buy it. I mean, I wanted to see it for Mel Gibson and John Lithgow more than anything. Because to me, they were the reason to see the movie. The fact that Mel Gibson was actually being given, you know, any role in a comedy of any sort was pretty exciting to me.
Yeah, even if it's, you know, a role where he is, like, playing the asshole or the, you know, old, grungy, tough guy asshole that he's kind of, which fairly has been given. I mean, he's clearly had a reputation that, he's clearly built himself a reputation that is not desirable, so
yeah. Right.
So, and he's playing to that, 100%, and it's kind of, I was watching a Cracked video recently, and I'll link it in the description below, but they've kind of made this very good observation that Mark Wahlberg and Mel Gibson, they have really very colored pasts, to say the least, and they're cast in this movie purposefully by Adam McKay to be like the tough guys, the, you know, the people that are clearly meant to be wrong. And it's an interesting observation, but the thing about this movie does is it doesn't completely side with Will Ferrell's side either. Like, it's very much like everyone's pretty much a terrible parent.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's the running theme of the whole movie, is that everyone is like a terrible parent or whatever else. And I mean, again, that's fine. The biggest problem though is that it just doesn't really do anything with it. Like, I've seen the terrible parenting thing in Christmas movies before. I mean, Christmas Vacation, of course, is like an all-time classic. And that whole thing is about Clark, you know, not being a great parent and really not doing very well with Christmas. And that works in that movie, you know?
But the thing I'll say about Christmas Vacation, though, is it's justifiable, like, why he's having a tough time.
No, I agree. But here's the problem, and it's the same problem I have with a lot of things nowadays when it comes to many, many different comedies, is that we end up in this place where they're being stupid for the sake of being stupid. They're not doing it because it's funny. They're just doing it because they can. And I think that really undermines the movie itself, because stupid humor doesn't have to inherently also be just lowbrow all the time. You know, Mel Brooks made a whole career out of doing stupid comedy, but it was good stupid comedy.
There was more effort, more than just, okay, we're going to sit the camera here and let them kind of improvise the scene out.
Right, exactly. And so it's just very frustrating that, you know, they don't do that in this movie or most movies nowadays. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's unfortunately become a brand because of guys like Sandler who really push that. Well, and it's a bummer because they can do better. Again, like, this is Will Ferrell, who is in Stranger Than Fiction, which is a really, really fantastic film. And he's quite good in it. And it's not like Anchorman is a terrible movie. Anchorman's one of my favorite comedies of all time. Step Brothers also. But
Anchorman 2.
Yeah, Anchorman. I love Anchorman 2. And it's just, it's frustrating.
Yeah, when he and Adam McKay like team up, it's like gold.
Well, and that's like, Adam McKay produced this.
His company produced it. Yeah.
It just seems odd that because it's not really the kind of Adam McKay comedy I'm expecting.
Yeah, and it's just, well, I mean, it should be made point that it's not directed by him. It's directed by Sean Anders, who brought us the golden Adam Sandler classic, That's My Boy. where
what a garbage movie.
Where there's a running joke about a sister and a brother fucking. And there's nothing, and that's the joke, is that they are fucking. And fucked less, up.
The less said about that movie, the better as well.
Oh, and there's another incest joke in this movie.
Yeah, there is. And I thought that was a step too far, because it keeps going, too. Like, it's not like a one-off incident or anything. It continues to keep going and going, and it, like, makes the whole end of the whole end of the movie is, like, 10 minutes of that joke continuing over and over and over again, which is a very odd choice.
And it's so odd. Well, and the thing is, the joke is, it's not, you know... incest is terrible and it was wrong, but the whole idea of it, what is, it just keeps going and going and going. It's like, we know incest is terrible.
Right.
We're sitting here with our mouths open.
Well, unfortunately, in a world where our president has said that, you know, if his daughter wasn't his daughter, you'd fuck her. You have to.
Dear God.
I mean, am I wrong? I hate to say it, but.
Yeah, but we're not all stupid.
We're not, but again, I mean, there is a core group that probably, you know, listens to Dear Presidente, and I hate that we even have to have that as a conversation.
I can't emphasize enough. I was sitting in the theater with a bunch of older women, basically just a lot of older people. A lot of older people showed up to my screening.
Older people at mine, too. People want to see Mel Gibson and John Lithgow. Like, that sounds crazy, but that is a big part of why people were here.
And there was, like, a big... And then just crickets when that joke happened. I mean, it was...
There should have been. Jesus.
I mean, it's just like, whoa, let's not, you know... And it just kept going. And it even got worse because the kid... is because the kid that, you know, does, or the person, the kid that's, you know, committing incest is like, he now, like, gets all the girls in this, you know, theater just kissing him. It gets
right.
More weirder and weirder. And I'll say this, speaking of the movie theater, the one redeeming quality I love about this movie is there's a whole running joke, and we're kind of in spoiler territory now, so if you want to see it, go see it and then come back. But there's this one joke, and I think Patrick knows what I'm talking about, where Liam Neeson is in, like, this fake movie that they all watch.
Mistletoe. And it's, like, missile, like, he's holding a baby in a rocket launcher. Like, you actually see a standee for it in the theater. It's mm-hmm. incredible. And he even voice cameos?
I think so. I mean,
if not, it's a real good impersonation.
And I mean, it is, I wish we were, like, I was sitting in the theater, and look, I don't hate this movie, but I was sitting in the theater at that point going, I would pay money to see this movie.
I thought it was a huge missed opportunity that they didn't show what was happening. I really did. I thought that was a really big missed opportunity, because they went as far as to make a stand for it in the movie. They should have filmed a fake scene for it as well. Because they filmed audio for it.
I mean, you spent $69 million. Like, you had $69 million. Use it for something, like, for an actual joke.
Right. And I don't know. Like, I think that I love the end of the movie for going as far to be, like, this mission statement for why theaters are important and why... Like, that's the one thing about the movie I really, really love, is that it really goes out of its way to be, like, movie theaters are important, and movie going is important, and the community it creates is important. I thought that was a really great message. But it's used in a movie that totally doesn't deserve it.
Well, and it's also used in, and it also just comes in, like...
out of nowhere.
It just comes out, like, you know, like a screaming chicken, you know, screaming, I have a message! I have a message! Like, and that's the, you know, and that's the whole thing, and it's like... It has nothing to do with other themes of the movie. It has nothing to do with anything else. I mean, they're really just in the theater because they're trapped there.
Like the, right.
It becomes like the day after tomorrow for some reason. Because they get trapped and they're all sitting and watching this movie and yeah, it's a good statement, especially now given that people are kind of exodus of theaters, even though next month we're pretty much going to see a massive, you know, line of people seeing Star Wars for a weekend. But yeah, it's there, but also it's kind of like half whatever, because we're already in the theater. We're watching this in a theater. So clearly we get this message anyway. We get the moral anyway.
Right.
So it's just a thing that came and go. I like the Liam Neeson part, but that was about it. That's what I'll say about the theater scene.
Well, I also like seeing John Cena try to sing. If we could have more movies of John Cena singing, I would approve of that.
Yeah, it's fine.
I just because I thought it was funny. I mean, again, it's not that the movie is bad. It's mostly harmless. The problem is that it's just not the most well thought out movie. And I think that it goes for cheap jokes and cheap shots that don't need to be made. You know, like, it just seems odd. They went weird places with it that I don't necessarily think we needed.
Well, it's a movie where, like I said earlier, it's just like the whole idea, every joke and everything in the movie, for the exception of a couple things, like the satellite pole thing and a couple other gags, like, it's all like, we're just going to a location and we're going to just let these actors improv. And the thing is, that's the typical comedy of almost every comedy. I mean, for the exception of an Edgar Wright movie, every comedy does that. Every comedy just has actors just standing around doing this, you know, typical shot, reverse shot, you know, reverse shot, you know, of just them improvising. And sometimes it's funny, but it's not that it doesn't really do anything for the movie. And it really creates a conflict that probably should have been resolved a movie ago.
Right.
Because that's really the thing, too, is that the conflict of the movie is Christmas kind of brings out the worst in Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg's characters, because Mel Gibson is Satan and he wants to see another family crumble. I that's what I'm getting at. He's Satan and he wants to see another family crumble because it's just funny to him.
I can't go that far, because like they explain in the movie, it just comes down to he's more upset that the Mark Wahlberg character Dusty doesn't want to spend time with him. And they like, that's the whole thing by the end of the movie, is that it turns out like all he really wants is, he's basically being childish because he feels like he is being blown off by his son, so he needs to destroy his son's life or his relationship with his kids, because that's what he feels he did. And so he's almost doing it for the wrong he's definitely doing it for the wrong reasons.
Oh,
but
yeah.
He's doing it because he feels like that's what he has to do, and that's to get in his son's good grade. It's a really stupid way to go about it, but that's the whole thing about this movie, is that it's just in general not a very smart movie.
Yeah. And look, I will admit, I'm a fan of hangout movies, but this is not the kind of hangout movie I'm talking about.
No.
I say I like hangout movies.
A hangout movie to me is like Dazed and Confused.
Right, like Linklater or Guardians 2 or... I saw the new Linklater movie recently, and that's really good.
Yeah, I really want to see it. I'm a big fan of The Last Detail, which is the first book that they made, and it's got Jack Nicholson, and you know, it's a really great movie. And now, I mean, there was a second book, and this is what that second book was.
Ah, cool. Okay.
I mean, they changed the names of the characters and stuff because it's not obviously a direct sequel. You're not going to get most of those guys back now, but, you know.
Right.
I wish, though. I wish. If only they could have gotten Jack Nicholson back.
Yeah. Well, Jack Nicholson is retired except for that one movie he wants to do, and I don't even think he's going to be able to do that movie.
You're talking about the Kristen Wiig one, the remake of that French comedy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, no, Paramount wants to do it. I think Paul Feig is directing it, so we'll see what happens.
Oh, okay. All right.
Because Feig is not obviously going to be doing a second Ghostbusters, and he's doing something right now though with Blake Lively. A horror or a thriller? A thriller or something.
I thought he was doing that Emma Thompson like movie where she's like a late night host.
He could be doing that too.
Cause the thing is Paul Feig's been doing a lot of other stuff lately as well, so I don't even think they were going to do a Ghostbusters 2.
They were going to until it didn't do well. They spent too much money on it because that's typical Sony.
Well, they spent too much money over time, like trying to get Bill.
The movie itself cost a lot of money though too. Like over $150 million, a lot of money.
Yeah, but how much of that was just 30 years of them trying to get Bill Murray back?
Less than you might think.
Okay. but anyway, so Daddy's Home 2. I don't have much more to say. I wished Linda Cardellini had more to do.
I hated that they made her such a damsel at times, man. She is so talented, and she deserves a little bit better.
She is. She's a really talented comedy actress and also a dramatic actress. I mean, in her bit role in Age of Ultron, she really is like anchoring Hawkeye or Clint's character.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So I mean she clearly can do this kind of stuff, and she clearly wants it because you just see her every now and then just like poking her head into situations like, "Hey guys, I can be a part of this movie too." But no, they kind of sideline her for more, you know, Will Ferrell chopping down a satellite pole.
And again, I love Will Ferrell, so it sucks that he is in something like this that really just makes him look dumber and dumber and dumber. When I can watch things like Anchorman, and yeah, the character's dumb, but he's still funny. Like, he's painfully dumb in this, where you're like, wow, how do you breathe?
Well, it's just, he's just a stooge. He's essentially
he's all three stooges rolled into one.
Yeah.
And I just wish that they'd do a sequel to The Other Guys at this point. Like, I can't believe they did a sequel to Daddy's Home before they did a sequel to The Other Guys. Because Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell, I give them that they have amazing comedic chops. And they play off of each other very, very well.
Yeah, well, I mean, they do, and I think The Other Guys is a fantastic comedy.
It's a great movie. It's everyone talks about Anchorman and Step Brothers, and overlook how good The Other Guys is. And Michael Keaton is fantastic in that movie. Mark Wahlberg is fantastic in that movie. You have The Rock and Sam Jackson, and it is such a great movie. Very, very underrated little movie.
I wish that movie got a sequel. And that's the one where you could probably do a whole franchise of it.
Well, and that's why I was always surprised that they didn't do it, to be honest with you. Because yeah. if any property deserved it. Right, it was. It was very successful, actually. It did very well for itself. But, I mean, what can I say, right?
Yeah. I mean, I still chuckle just thinking about that the death scene of Samuel Jackson and The Rock. They just like...
Oh, one of the all-time great death scenes in any movie ever. it's not even a question. It's so absurd, and that's why it works.
It is.
Like, legitimately, it is so absurd. And that's that whole movie. In their funeral, when everyone starts fighting afterwards over, like, who's going to be the next Hinesman and Dansmith is so funny. That, like, quiet fight where they're all trying not to make noise at the funeral. Oh, my God. It's incredible.
Oh.
I watch that movie all the time still. Like, I next to Anchorman, it is, and Step Brothers, I think it's the best movie that they made together. The Adam McKay and Will Ferrell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're so talented. I wish that they would do more, but.
Hey, Adam McKay, if you're listening, make another really good comedy. I'm happy that you're doing movies like, oh God, now I'm blanking. What's that movie that he did?
The Big Short.
The Big Short, and he's doing that Dick Cheney.
I'm super excited about that. My only qualm with that is, God damn it, I wish that Will Ferrell was playing George Bush in it.
Oh God, yes.
That would be
awesome.
I know that they got Sam Rockwell, and Sam Rockwell's great, but God, I just wanted so badly for Will Ferrell to be in it playing George W. Bush.
Oh God, that would have been perfect. Oh gosh. But yeah, I'm glad you're making those movies, Adam McKay, but we really need you to come back to comedy.
We really do. And I do have to point out that Daddy's Home 2 made a shit ton of money.
Oh, this opening.
Like $30 million. It was the biggest opening for any comedy outside of Girls Trip this year.
Yeah, and that's really good. Well, I mean, to be fair, comedies have not been that great this year.
No, they haven't. And that's what's so interesting, is that it did so well.
Yeah, and well, it's the power of Wahlberg. It's the power of that first movie. Apparently,
So here's the thing.
Go ahead.
Here's the interesting thing. Mm-hmm. That now makes Mel Gibson bankable again. And now that Warner Brothers is really mulling over Lethal Weapon 5, I feel like this movie doing well just pretty much solidified that movie is happening.
Isn't Danny Glover about ready to die?
Yeah, he's been trying to retire for 30 years as Murtaugh, so.
I mean, every time I see him, I'm like, dude, just rest. It's okay. It's okay. Well, and also, I don't know what really, the only person I want to do a Lethal Weapon movie is Shane Black at this point. Because Richard Donner, I love him to death, but he's I don't want him to be 90 and, you know, trying to, you know, direct action movies. I don't want him to break. I don't want him to work himself to death to make this movie.
I think if he surrounds himself with the right people, he'll be okay. But I mean, your point is duly noted.
Yeah, and because I really have a lot of respect and love for Richard Donner, especially what he did for Superman. I just would hate to see him like be in the middle of this movie and goes. But I get why people want him back. But hey, we still got Shane Black.
Yeah, he's a little busy right now though.
Well, I mean, when you are making really good movies, you better be busy.
Well, exactly. That's my point. He's a little bit busy.
Yeah. So with that said, speaking of cop dramas and mysteries, are you ready to move on to Murder on the Orient Express? Do we have any more things to say for Daddy's Home 2?
No, I mean, I'm surprised that we talked about it as long as we did, considering it's just, you know,
it's average.
It's just a movie that happened.
It's fine if you want to Redbox it.
Pretty much. And that's pretty much it.
That is. So with that, let's talk about something that is really good till something happens in the movie. But Patrick, I'm gonna let you go first, since you have a more established history with Murder on the Orient Express than I do. So what are your thoughts on this movie?
I want to love this movie to pieces, and there's a lot of it that I like that I think works very, very well. But my problem is that not enough of it works for its own good. That I think that when you have a movie like Murder on the Orient Express that was made back in the 70s with someone like Sidney Lumet. I always say Lumet. Don't mind me. So Sidney Lumet makes this movie with an all-star cast. You got like Anthony Perkins and Sean Connery, like these heavy hitters. Albert Finney is playing Hercule Poirot. And man, like, it's a great movie. It's only about the murder itself. It doesn't have a Indiana Jones style cold open like this movie does, which was kind of an odd choice to begin with. But hey, it is what it is. I like this movie. I don't love it, though. I think that it's got a few miscasts. I think that Kenneth Branagh did a nice job. I think that it's mostly well-paced, but I think it starts to lose steam by the second act and never quite recovers. And I don't know, man. Like, I enjoyed it, but it just doesn't quite come together in a way that I was hoping. And as someone who likes the Agatha Christie novels and likes the Hercule Poirot character, I thought Branagh was great in the role. I think he tried very hard. I just think that it wasn't the right time to do an adaptation. I love Michelle Pfeiffer and Daisy Ridley. Like, they're great actresses, but it all feels like they cast them just for the sake of casting them instead of it actually being the right parts. I especially felt that way with Josh Gad. I think Josh Gad is horribly miscast in the movie. I think that they brush over way too much of what's going on in the storyline itself for other things to, you know, be quippy and funny with Hercule Poirot versus actually establishing any of these side characters that you actually have to know about. So that when the big twist at the end of the movie happens, you actually have some sort of, you know, actual, what do you call it? Stakes.
Stakes will also
understanding. Right. And so there's just some very strange ideas that they pulled from this thing. And I'm still trying to figure out exactly why they did what they did. And I don't know, man. I wanted to love this movie and I like it a lot. Don't get me wrong. It just is not the kind of movie that I was hoping it would be.
Yeah, I think I should make it perfectly clear. I actually do like this movie considerably a bit. It's very well made. The 65 millimeter cinematography is fantastic.
There's a really beautiful tracking shot, too. It's the longest tracking shot ever done on 65 millimeter.
Do you remember what it was?
It's the
couple in the movie.
It's the shot of them going through the train station, and you're establishing each of the characters as it goes along.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Because I keep thinking it's the shot where they're just going in and out of the cabins.
Well, that's, you know, because it starts there and then it has Poirot going through and you start to see all the characters and Michelle Pfeiffer is following him.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I get. It is a really good shot. And well, I mean, just everything about the cinematography and the attention to detail and how. You know, I think it was mentioned on the War for the Planet of the Apes. It was mentioned for War for the Planet of the Apes that it was very, you know, they used the Arri Alexia 65, which, yes, I know that's not 65 millimeter film, but still, they use that 65 millimeter look to give you that, you know, the face, you know, so you see every detail of the face and see every crease. And here, you just feel it everywhere. You feel the attention to detail on the actor's expressions. Everything,
right?
You just feel how warm it is. You feel how soft it is. I don't think I can pronounce the full name of the cinematographer, but he did a fantastic job.
It's a very beautiful film, man. It's like one of the most beautiful films I've seen all year.
But
the shots watching the train like go through are just beautiful and fun, like just very, very breathtaking. And there's a lot to love about the movie. I mean, there really is. I just wish I had loved it more.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I think that it really does do something special. I think that it does. I do like most of the cast. I really do. I for me, Josh Gad is the most miscast. I know that there's a lot of people who don't like Johnny Depp in the movie. I actually thought Depp was fine.
Well, he's utilized very well. He's in and out.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. And here's the thing about Murder on the Orient Express. If you know Murder on the Orient Express, you already know how it ends. And there was a lot of us wondering if they would even try to change it because of that reason. Because it's the ending of that novel is very, very famous for a reason. And so if you know the ending, the problem is that the outcome, since you already know what's coming, the movie needs to grip you and hold you and try to keep you interested. And since they don't really let you get to know any of the other characters, it makes it a little hard at one point. You know, and that's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. Because did the original Sidney Lumet movie in the same way?
Yeah, and it's much more haunting the way that it's done in that one, in my opinion.
Because mm-hmm. here's the thing about the ending, and I think we're ready to go into spoiler territory. But the ending of the movie very much is everyone to a certain extent was involved in the death of Cassavetes' death or Johnny Depp's death. Everyone played a role in it to an extent, to the point where they all got their own. Johnny Depp pretty much was a terrible person, like through and through. Like, he has caused every one of these people in this train pain to the point where they kind of create a little, I don't want to say secret society because that's too campy, but they kind of created like kind of a group to where they planned Johnny Depp's death very thoroughly. And it's really really cathartic. It's, you know, and you kind of get the feel that this was supposed to be, you know, Poirot's like arc of this movie is he's supposed to kind of figure out what justice really is in, you know, in light of everything, like, what does it really mean? And it's justice really meant to be served for this death, for this murder. But I don't think mm-hmm. I don't think the movie does all the work that it needed to do, because it's trying very hard to be a theatrical showy mystery, which there's no problem being theatrical showy mystery. It's just, I don't think it does enough of the groundwork in the screenplay choices that Kenneth Branagh uses to get, you know, from scene to scene to show that Hercule Poirot has, you know, to learn this arc to basically be like, what is really justice? Like, what is it really, like, what, like, you know, what's the line of justice? Like, does Cassavetti deserve a rightful, does he deserve the justice for his death, essentially? And that's really what he has to, you know, over. And that's really the story is like moral, but I don't think it did all the work. And also, the big plot hole that I was box review is that, and this is going to sound very nitpicky to some people, but it really does kind of get me a little bit. Is that if there's this one extra person that Hercule Poirot is coming on, and Daisy Ridley's governess character, she knows, you know, who he is, because she was kind of sort of there when his investigation ended. You know, why didn't anyone like question, especially her, like, hey, are you getting off early at all? And, you know, to try and figure out, like, maybe, like, let's try to delay the murder so we don't all, like, get, you know, so we don't have this detective bearing on us the whole time. And on top of that,
right,
and on top of that, why didn't they just throw Johnny Depp's whole everything just out the window as everything out and like evidence and all? Like, why leave a body? Just throw it out the window,
right?
So just in that way it could be, you know, well, they then really, because a Hercule Poirot would have nothing, would be like, well, we can't really do anything because, you know, I don't have any.
But he's Hercule Poirot, the world's greatest detective.
Even great detectives have hard time solving mysteries, Patrick.
No, but he's Hercule Poirot.
Yeah.
I have to say, it's kind of funny to me that they did this whole Raiders of the Lost Ark style opening to explain who Hercule Poirot is. And it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah,
it's totally unnecessary to the rest of the movie.
Well, I mean, we kind of get the sense of is it a Q Poirot?
Hercule Poirot.
I mean, we get the sense of the character anyway while we're on the train and on his, you know, through conversations of people anyway. But, right. But I mean, it's the typical, like, let's figure out how smart this person is that, you know, Sherlock Holmes uses and a lot of other modern, like, how we kind of integrate modern, you know, detectives from, you know, the 1800s, all from their, like, you know, literature, and how do we integrate them into, like, our modern society. And this
is- I know. It was just funny. Because it's completely a creative choice, and I like the way that they set it up. It has nothing to do with the bigger part of the movie, but I understand that they're trying to establish early on, this is Hercule Poirot, and he is the world's greatest detective.
He's very smart.
Like, down to putting his cane into a wall to make sure that the bad guy will, you know, not get away, because he knows that he'll try to run that way. Like, he's 50 steps ahead of everyone around him.
Right. And it's kind of interesting that he can't figure, we as an audience can't figure out who this, you know, killer is anyway, or that everyone was the killer anyway. So it's just interesting that it took him a little while to get to that point, but I mean, this is a movie, so.
Right.
This is a movie. So there has to be a little bit of this, suspension of disbelief, but like I said, the plot hole of them trying to do this without Poirot on the train is a little bit just like, well, couldn't they have just waited, or really, why do they all have to stab him? Like, why not just give him a poison?
Like, the world will never know.
Like, why not just poison the guy? I mean, is it really, like, I mean, I get, like, cinematically it's cathartic to show them all stabbing him, but it's like, if you really are trying to do this without anyone knowing, just have somebody poison him.
Right.
And that's just how I think about this movie. Is it's a really fun film, but really, in the grand scheme of things, very whatever.
Yeah, I mean, and here again, I will say, like, I'm a big fan of the material. This is not the first time that this movie or that this book has been adapted. It won't be the last. And, you know, there's many adaptations of it. Brana just took his shot with his. And, I mean, really, the Academy Award goes to his mustache for Best Supporting Actor this year.
Oh, yeah. That mustache is a character.
That mustache is a thing of beauty. I cannot believe that it's... Look at it, man.
It is. And he has his own guard for it. Like, mustache guard for it when he sleeps. That's really funny. Kenneth Branagh is the star, and going back, you were mentioning Josh Gad. I didn't think he was that bad. In fact, I thought, you know, it was a daring decision to put him in this movie in that role.
You just have to remember that Anthony Perkins played the role originally, and Perkins fits it a lot more than Josh Gad does.
I bet he does. I'm willing to bet he does, because
that's the thing, is that for me, Anthony Perkins fits that kind of role much better.
Yep. And other than that, everyone is doing a really good job. Like, Michelle Pfeiffer has her moments that are really good. Everyone's doing wonderful with their part. So I like the movie overall, but I'm still like, it's a better mystery than The Snowman. It's a better mystery movie than The Snowman. I'll say that much.
That's not hard.
I mean, it's a pretty low bar, but it's a way better movie than The Snowman. So, but yeah, it's fun. It's a fun movie, and I'm I'm happy that it got made, and I hope Kenneth Branagh gets a chance to do another movie, a Poirot movie.
I think it will. I'm kind of in the same boat where I actually do hope it happens, because I think that there are other stories that are very, very good by Agatha Christie. Obviously, the Nile story is the one that they're hinting to next. And so because of that, that's clearly what I want to see. I would love to see a whole Egypt period setting, you know?
Yeah.
I think that opens up to something really cool. Death in the Nile is a great story. So I'm all about it. I'd like to see it happen. I think that it's doing well enough that it should probably warrant it.
Yeah, here's the thing. It didn't cost that much money to make, surprisingly. Like, it's a pretty cheap... I mean, it's a $55 million movie, but still, I mean...
Yeah, but I mean, it made $30 million its opening weekend.
Yeah.
And it's doing very well overseas for itself on top of it.
And so. I don't think Fox planned that it would do that great anyway. Or they did. They were kind of just putting it out there for like a good winter release.
And it's, right.
So I hope we get another one of these, and I hope Kenneth Branagh will do it. Right now he's doing Artemis Fowl, but after that, I mean, I hope he does it.
Well, and the other question is, with Artemis Fowl, is that still on track right now because of the Weinstein fallout?
I thought Disney was doing that movie.
Yeah, but Weinstein was also producing it.
I mean, that's an easy fix.
But you have to remember, he was putting a lot of money into it. So you need to find someone willing to put as much money into it.
I'll say this. If that movie, Kenneth Branagh's had really good success with...
Thor?
Well, not just Thor, but Cinderella.
Yep.
So, I mean, he has the relationship with Disney. So,
he has the relationship with Marvel.
Yeah. Well, Marvel. Who is it? Marvel will have nothing to do with Artemis Fowl.
No. But what I'm getting at is, because of that, is that, yeah, he definitely. Marvel.
What?
Marvel would be like, hey, you guys realize he is, like, that's that whole synergy thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really hope big things for Kenneth Branagh, and he deserves to do something good, and I hope he continues shooting on 70mm, because, I mean, the 70mm in this movie is fantastic. I guess it's 65. I've been saying 65. It's just all fantastic. It looks fantastic. So I hope he continues working on it, and I hope we see another movie from him soon.
I want Kenneth Branagh to work forever. I really do. I think that he has the potential to be an all-time great filmmaker.
He's done great movies. I mean, he's done Hamlet. I mean,
no. What I mean is, I think he can be that echelon of. When we're talking about some of the great filmmakers, I think he deserves to be in that conversation by the time his career is over, if he continues to do things like this. Like you said, like Hamlet, like even Thor. Again, I will argue that all the time.
I really liked his Cinderella. And I'll even give his Jack Ryan a pass. Like, his Jack Ryan was entertaining.
Right.
To an extent. I mean, there's problems with that movie, but still, it's still an entertaining film. But yeah, I hope for the best for Kenneth Branagh, and I hope we can see more of it. And I hope Artemis Fowl happens, because that actually is a decent pairing of material and director. Especially now that we've seen what he can do with a character like Artemis Fowl.
Right. And I just want everyone to know, I just got my Last Jedi screen. I'm very excited.
No,
to see it.
When?
And it's a couple of weeks from now.
Oh, you people in California, you get all you.
You mean what? You people in the business in California? Oh, yeah.
Well, you guys get to see movies earlier than we do. I mean, we're not going to be able to see. I won't be able to see Call Me by Your Name and Roman J. Israel till like December.
Ah, oh, man.
Yeah,
you should just move out here, Kale. Just move out here.
One day, I'm like Tim Burton in that Death of Superman documentary. Just one day it'll happen. But yeah. So now, do we have any more final thoughts to say on Murder on the Orient Express?
My whole mind just went to mush. So.
Oh wow, that was quick.
Watch the movie. Well, okay. Can you blame me? That's like the best news I've received in a week.
Oh yeah. Okay, that's fair. I mean, oh yeah.
I'm just saying.
Well, congratulations. You're going to see the movie a few days before I do.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You even saw Disaster Artist before I did.
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, I thought you did see it.
No, I saw Daddy's Home 2 the other night.
Oh, okay. Maybe I got something. I got some.
We posted a picture in front of the Disaster Artist board, but I have not seen it yet.
Oh, okay. No. All right. Yeah. I won't even, well, still, I won't see Disaster Artist till probably Christmas.
Oh, that's just, so sad.
That's just how, you know, Georgia works. Fucking Georgia. We film all of your movies. We house you Marvel for a year.
Yeah, you well, you know.
Your Infinity, you can film your costume party. And, okay, that's a little too mean. It's more than just a costume party.
Yes,
But still, it's like... Can you throw some love? Like, can we get treated as well as, like, Chicago, at least? Can we get, like, Chicago love?
No. Apparently not. I'm sorry, mate.
How does New York even... How did that even get started? How did New York start getting started?
They have a huge film community out there. New York and Los Angeles are the two biggest film-loving communities in the entire United States.
Well, we love film.
Georgia, I'm just telling film. You.
We love film more than Chicago, I would dare to say. I don't know.
Probably a valid point there, but remember, I don't make the rules.
Yeah. We just abide by them. But
yes, exactly.
But yeah, so...
I do like the movie, though. People should go see it. Just, you know, Kenneth Branagh's fantastic in it. Daisy Ridley's fantastic in it. Michelle Pfeiffer's fantastic in it. Josh Gad is miscast. Johnny Depp is fine in it for what he is given to do.
And that's really what he should have been given to do.
Yeah. But, you know, take it or leave it.
Yeah. So, with that said, I think we can go to plug-in. So, Patrick, do you just want to quickly plug in something?
Yeah, of course. You guys can find me on Twitter at PJ_Campbell or at Facebook at Patrick Campbell _PJ. You can find our podcast, Real Film Chatter, our EEL Film Chatter, on Podbean and on iTunes. Go ahead, subscribe, listen, enjoy. I rattle on about all things in the world of movies and the stuff going on. So I have a good time. And, you know, just keep an eye out on Collider for the big Schmodown Spectacular, which is going to be in December. You guys will not want to miss it.
Great. You guys can find me at Movie Kale on Twitter, and you can also follow this podcast at The Youth Critic. You can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast at KHC Network. Also, check us out on Podbean and iTunes through the KHC Network website, and tell us how we're doing. Subscribe. Tell us if you want us to do any kind of retrospectives, anything cool. Since we're approaching the holiday season, there are going to be, like every other year, there's going to be gaps where I won't be able to do it for a week because the place where I edit my podcasts is closed for the whole week or rest of the year when we get to Christmas. So next week, there won't be a Youth Critic episode, but we will try tonight to get a Justice, or at least tomorrow morning, get the Justice League podcast out with Brandon and Chris. And then I think when we come back from Thanksgiving, we'll do like kind of a roundup of more Justice League stuff, more DCEU talk, and we'll talk Pixar's new movie Coco. And in the upcoming weeks, we'll try and do a retrospective on LA Confidential. And I'm going to throw this out there, but I think I'm going to try and do a retrospective on Tommy Wiseau's The Room in honor of the disaster artist. So keep a lookout on that stuff. And obviously we'll talk about Star Wars when that movie comes out. When that behemoth comes out.
Patrick, what's Star Wars?
What?
What's Star Wars?
Yeah, what's Star Wars? It's only, you know, the thing that keeps cinema alive now, because that's all we got instead of superhero movies.
Yep.
So anyway, thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back with you next week. Violence,
acts of war, and terrorism are all on the rise.
I had a dream. It was the end of the world. I think it's something more, something darker.
We're asking people we don't know to risk their lives.
A strong man is strong as alone. You ever heard that?